Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Sunday Special Edition. My name is Melanie, and I'm Melanie C, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Oregon. Today is Sunday, March 23rd, 2014. And the share code, or share ID rather, for Friday, March 21st, 2014, is 6074. Today's presentation here at the Sunday Special Edition is entitled, I Did It God's Way, Not My Way. And our speaker hails from Dallas, Texas. The way that I would think and that view that I had of life ended up to be actually the root of my trouble, the Big Book tells me. In essence, selfishness and self-centeredness. What had to give so that I might release the death grip that I had on the way that I was thinking and acting and living in life, the way that I was treating other people, and the way that I had excluded a power greater than myself from my life. The Big Book shares all kinds of ideas and journeys of individuals that went from the life that they had to depths and despairs and the grip that alcoholism had on their lives to a place that they could live happy, joyous, and free again. And how did that happen? Through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are asked the question over and over again, how will this be and who will this be? And on page 76, there's a bit of a question there as well. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now have them all, every one? Today, to present this particular wonderful titled subject matter, I Did It God's Way, Not My Way, is Cliff C. Welcome, Cliff C. Cliff, can you press star 1 on your phone keypad? That will unmute you to be able to be heard.
Thank you, Melanie. Appreciate that. My name is Cliff, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm grateful to be here. My story, you know, in terms of doing it God's way and not my way, because my way just got me into a whole lot of trouble, and frankly, on the brink of death, as far as I was concerned. And the fact is that if I'm here, it is only by the grace of God that I am. Just to give you a little bit of background, I started this program. My abstinence date is April 19th, 2007. I was 53 years old. 6'3", 385 pounds, give or take. I had high blood pressure, high cholesterol, borderline high sugar, an irregular heartbeat, and God did for me what I could not do for myself. Within a relatively short period of time, God removed 190 pounds. I have been at 195 pounds, give or take a little bit there, for about 5.5 years. And it has been absolutely amazing. Let me just sort of let you know what I was like beforehand. The story goes, I was a big baby. I wasn't a large child until probably 7 or 8 years old, and from then on, I just remember wearing husky clothes and being embarrassed by a number of those things. My family owned a catering service, and they catered parties all over town, as well as all over the country in a certain sense. And I learned to eat fast. I also learned that I could have whatever I wanted. They did you know, a lot of food replaced emotions, particularly for stress and for love. And every time we needed anything, we were indulged by different foods and everything like that. I remember one of my first food thoughts was walking out of the kitchen there and seeing this tall stacking trays of flowered products and grabbing one of those on the way out and just being basically seduced by it. It tasted good and I could go back there anytime that I wanted. The things that were going on, let's see, in reflection, I saw that when I was probably anywhere from the age of five to eight, there were a lot of traumas that happened in my life. Someone attempted to kidnap my sister. I was, there was an elementary school in our town, that was actually bombed by a father, and several people died in that. There was sexualization, by a female relative. I remember, as a child, I had other little things occurring, but it was just sort of an accumulation of things that made me live in fear quite a bit. Another boy and I were just having a little fight with using magnolia bulbs off of someone's tree, and they took offense. And we were only 5 years old, but they called the police on us, and so we had to. So the police were at my door, and which was really pretty traumatic for me because I felt like I was, going to see Broderick Crawford in Highway Patrol. Now, some of you are obviously much younger than that, but you might catch it on reruns. I had, when I was younger, I started a fire on my grandmother's porch. One of my neighbors moved, that's traumatic enough. A friend, her father passed away suddenly. Then we moved and then my brother was born. So, with all those traumas that occurred and the fact that food was so readily accessible to me, I used food as a drug for everything. I remember when the president's physical fitness program came out. I mean, it was scary, the things that I was supposed to do or that they were asking us to do. It just was not, it wasn't feasible for me. My sister got taunted in school for her weight, and I was certainly teased, and I remember all the things about all the nursery rhymes about fatty, fatty 2x4, and, being called names not only by so-called classmates and friends, but also by even by my father. Whether it was Fat Boy or Tubelard or something along those lines. And I tried to go on diets. My mother took me to a doctor, I think when I was about 12 years old. I was put on bifetamines. And I don't think that actually even worked for me. I don't know why, but it didn't. And I remember the doctor basically saying that, the sky was the limit as far as my weight was concerned, but that didn't register with me. I didn't understand that. I watched as family members would go on and off different diets, and that was always a challenge. I mean, it was the AIDS candies, AYDS, Metrical, which was some powdered drink, predating, Slim Fast and others. But we tried everything, went to health clubs, and nothing seemed to work. I got through high school, and and actually I had a growth spurt between high school and college, but unfortunately, because I had that growth spurt, you would have thought it would have worked out okay with my height, but that didn't happen either, because what happened was that because of my size, they thought I was on the football team in the dorm, and so I got free access to more of my drugs, and I took advantage of it, and I just kept getting bigger and bigger. This is a cunning, baffling, powerful, progressive, and deadly disease. I didn't know it then, and it's very hard to see it, for me to see my future. But it's not impossible. And I think that's also one of the things about OA, is that it allowed me to basically see my future. And but I dated some in college, and went out to eat and did all the nice things. I remember when I was I was probably about 19 or 20 years old. I remember going out on a date and leaving and stopping at the convenience store to get food, because I was hungry. And I guess I look back on my life and I realize that the hungry, angry, lonely, tired, I was always hungry, but the hunger was not necessarily for food. The more I ate, the hungrier I became. The hunger was an emotional hunger. It was an anxious hunger. It was a hunger, really, for spirituality, to understand. I was angry at the world. I was angry, that I didn't get things done, or whatever our situation was. Financially, it was a challenge, and lonely, I could be alone in a crowd. It didn't matter. And tired, I just didn't have the energy. I used to think it was, it was normal for us after a meal to take a nap, because everyone in my family overate. And, since that was part of our business, that's what we did. I got through college. I went and got an advanced degree, a doctorate, and a master's degree. What happened was a friend of mine, he decided he was going to help me lose weight, and we started working out together. We worked out for 3 hours at a time. And I did lose weight. I lost down from about 290 down to around 230, and I felt real good and looked real good and everything else. But even at that point, I realized that there was no way that I could continue, that for the rest of my life. And sure enough, the weight just, came back on. It took a while. It took about 4 or 5 years for that amount to come back on, but that plus more came. And we went ahead. I signed up for so many different things. How many times could I sign up for different weight loss programs, Weight Watchers, Nutrisystems, OptiFast, different programs, and would have some success, but then less and less success, and it just got harder and harder. And eventually I went out to lunch with a friend who had done a 100-mile bicycle ride. And I heard this voice saying, "You can do that." And I thought, where'd that voice come from? And I turned around trying to find it, and there was nobody else around. And I went to go and try to find out about it, and they and I figured that they wouldn't allow me to do this because I weighed so much and I have an irregular heartbeat and everything like that, but that I would get credit for just attempting it, you know, because that was how my mode of operation. I mean, I would go ahead and, you know, if I told people I was on a diet, they felt better about it. But they didn't. And so I started exercising. I started doing 100-mile bike rides. The 100-mile bike rides led to a little bit of an injury. I started swimming, and then I started realized I could swim a mile and bike ride, you know, 100 miles, even weighing 370 pounds. And I ended up, now I just needed to be able to walk a distance, and I started doing triathlons. And I did triathlons in Hawaii and in Florida. I did 100-mile bike rides in Arizona and New England, and I did marathons, half marathons here in Texas. But I didn't lose weight. And I had sort of given up. And I was a member of a group, you know, sort of what happened. I was a member of a group who does speaking. And we had a topic assigned for the day on National Alcohol Awareness Day. And I thought that was a horrible subject. But I was responsible for it. So I went ahead and looked it up. I was supposed to come up with some questions. I looked up the questions, and I came up with some questions, and it brought me to AA, which reminded me of having gone to an OA meeting with my mother 35 years before. And I said, well, I wonder what they're doing. And I looked up what it was OA. I didn't think myself a compulsive overeater. I didn't even bother reading the things that were online. I'd looked for a meeting. And I looked for a meeting when there wouldn't be a meeting, because remember, I get credit for just trying, not for necessarily succeeding. And I looked for one on a Sunday. How about a Sunday night? There won't be a meeting then. And lo and behold, there was. I went ahead and told my wife, I remember telling my wife that Sunday I was going to a meeting that night, and she said, what kind of meeting? And I told her that it was OA, and I could hear her roll her eyes in her voice, because how many times, I mean, we had been married 25 years at the time, I just heard her, and she's not a compulsive overeater, which does also indicate that that first 25 years of marriage, although they were good years, it was not like oil and water. It was more like gasoline in a lit match. I was always searching for my fix, and I didn't even know that's what it was. So I went to that meeting, and I wished I could say that I walked into the room and everything made sense and I was struck abstinent, but it didn't happen. It was on April 1st, 2007, and I thought, what a perfect time, April Fool's Day. And God has this amazing sense of humor. I went to that meeting, and God just laughed at me, because I listened, but not very closely. I heard a woman say that she had lost 130 pounds and that she hadn't exercised. I heard some slogans that honesty will kill this disease. And I thought, really? That's interesting. You're only as sick as your secrets. You know, if you focus on the weight, you'll lose the recovery. If you focus on the recovery, you'll lose the weight. And of course, one day at a time. But even with all of that, I tried to run away from that meeting. I tried so hard, you know, and I went ahead and tried to bolt from the room, and this woman stopped me, and she said, you know, she was a traveling salesperson that she comes every couple of months. We'd see how much weight I had lost in a couple of months when she came back. And I thought, lady, you're crazy. I got out of the room. I got down. You know, I hadn't even made it out the driveway there. And somebody had called me on the phone. This was on the phone and in person in the meeting. And I couldn't shut them up. And I'm a people pleaser, so I couldn't. So I was on my way to the grocery store, and I didn't realize that I didn't know I was in the process of binging, or I was going to be binging that night. And you know, since I couldn't shut him up, he kept on talking until I made it to the grocery store, and I was in the parking lot. And I was looking inside. I could see through the glass. I could visualize my path, what I was going to eat while I was there, what I was going to eat on the road home, what would not melt before my wife went to bed, you know, what would be available to me in the morning. And then God clicked in. And God said, you know, you can do what they said. No flour, no sugar, no sweeteners, no caffeine. 3 meals a day, nothing in between. I didn't hear about weighing and measuring, but, you know, it wouldn't have mattered. I did that before. I had just never done them all at one time. I had done them all individually, but never all at one time. And I tried it on my own for about 2.5 weeks. I had already signed up for a bariatric surgery seminar. I went to that bariatric surgery seminar. And when I went there, the doctor basically said, no flour, no sugar, no sweeteners, no caffeine. Well, he didn't say it in so many words or in those specific words, but one would open, you know, the flour would gum up the opening, the sugar would cause something called the dumping syndrome, which he thought was a positive thing because it would condition you. It only works for a year. When you have sugar, it hits the colon and it makes you have a bodily function that you would prefer not to have. And then the sweeteners and caffeine, well, a big part of mine was diet drinks. I used to have six diet drinks, 12 ounces during the day and almost 2 liters at night. And it takes, according to them, because of the opening, it takes 2 hours for you to drink a 12-ounce diet drink. And then on top of it, it was going to cost $40,000 to $60,000. And I thought to myself, let's see, $2 a meeting or $60,000, and I didn't have the money. I was unemployed. But you know, if I could have afforded it, I would have. I would have done so many things before. They would have just been another tool that I had tried or another diet, you know. But in a way, that to me became a blessing of mine to not have had the money. And, you know, as the doctor is explaining it, he says insurance doesn't pay for any of these things. And I'm going, well, you know, everybody's calling out the name of their insurance companies and, you know, saying, you know, they don't do it, which is why we have the lap band surgery and we can finance that, you know, just like you do a car. And I thought, Now I recognize that I was buying surgery from a used car salesman in a white coat. And I thought, well, and then when we were talking about the different insurance companies, nobody's they would throw out names, and then I threw out my name, and he says, oh, yes, they're wonderful. they will work with you. And I thought, is this a sign from God? Is this a sign from God that I should be doing this? And then I realized that how excited he got at the name of my at the name of that insurance company. To me, that was more of an indication that do no harm is supposed to be what my physician is charged with. I mean, and I realized that even if my insurance would have paid it, my COBRA, that was not where God wanted me to be. And I went to meetings. I went back to my meeting. Someone said, had asked me, did I have a sponsor? They gave me a phone number. They said, he's busy, but maybe he knows someone who can help you get started. I called him up, and he said, I'm busy, but I'll help you get started. And that was April 19th, 2007. And I cry to this day when I think about it, because they talk about OA being the last house on the block. And the fact of the matter is that I was so far past the last house on the block. There were no streetlights. There was no paving. The dirt path, I had gone past that, past the sands, into the ocean. I was lying on the bottom of the ocean, looking up in the moonlit, watching the moon shine through the ocean. And God just reached down, plucked me out, carried me back to the room, put three angels in there, locked the door, and said, there's the path, just follow it. And I still didn't want to. And I still didn't want to. And I know that God has, done for me what I could not do for myself. I remember I was 4 months into abstinence when I remembered a dream that I had. And this dream was that I was lying in my grave looking up and watching my two daughters, who were 20 and 24 at the time, looking down on me and crying uncontrollably, watching their father be buried at an early age. And there was nothing I could do about it. And then 4 months into abstinence, I had, God had removed 60 pounds, and now all of a sudden there was hope for me, real hope. And my waking vision was no longer that my daughters would see their father be buried at an early age, but that I would get to see my daughters get married. And I have walked both my daughters down the aisle. And an added bonus, last year and a half ago, I became a grandfather for the first time. The greatest joy that I have had was being able to get down on all fours, crawling fast along the floor with my grandson following behind. And then just last week, my younger daughter announced that she's also having a child. And now the challenge is that one of them is in New York City, the other one is in Vancouver, and I'm here in Texas, which makes us tri-coastal. But even that, the fact that they are a distance away, is a gift from God. It's a gift of program. Because if I had been dead or disabled, neither one of them would have left, or at least, and would not know how high they could fly and how far they could soar, They just wouldn't have known. And so even if it pains me, my relationship with them is so much better than it ever was. My relationship with my wife is great. I mean, it's wonderful. It's not perfect. It's not perfect, but it is wonderful. We talk, we laugh, we she understands that my program comes first. And that's not easy. that's not easy. I remember it at a particular time in program that, you know, I told her, you know, I said, I'm going to need to, you know, have more room over here and things like that. She said, well, you know, I liked it better before. And I said, I realize that. And before you made all the decisions, I, you know, let you do that. I said, but I'm going to have to be making decisions. And I've got to be a part of this. And I know it's going to, there are going to be changes and things like that. But it is, you know, it's just how, you know, we will grow into this. And it has been an amazing experience. You know, in program, I used to, there used to be a saying that I had, and it was that for those who know, no explanation is necessary, and for those who don't, no explanation is adequate. And I used to think, you know, that basically says, if I know something you don't know, I'm not going to tell you, because even if I did, you wouldn't understand. So why should I waste my breath and waste your time? Which seems awfully arrogant, very arrogant. But the fact of the matter was, is that in OA, they do have something that bridges all of that. And that is to act as if. Find someone who has what you want. Do what they do. And one day at a time, you will know what they know. And while that is very positive, hello? While that is very positive, it's also challenging, because I know that for the first 2.5 years that I was in program, just like Dr. Bob said, it took him 2.5 years to have a spiritual experience. That's what it took for me. Because I remember having this spiritual experience, and it was only in my dream that I realized that in my dream I admitted I was powerless over food and that my life had become unmanageable. And the reason I realized it was after 2.5 years is in my dream I told myself, it's been 2.5 years. I should be able to have a bite of something. And I took that bite, and I had obsessions and ate through it, but woke up from it. And what transpired was, I realized that after that 2.5 years, I had already lost, you know, the 190 pounds. God had removed that. I knew that there was a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity, and that I had turned my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understood him, but I had not fully and unequivocally, you know, smashed the illusion that I was somehow going to be normal. And it was only in that dream that happened. And I've worked the steps, you know, I've worked the steps in a number of different studies, whether or not it has been in an AWOL, or whether or not it has been in back to basics, or in A Vision for You, or in other programs, or reading the Big Book and the like. But it is just, you know, it's so important to be working these steps and to appreciate, you know, all that Bill W. and Dr. Bob, you know, we say in program, you know, you want to live happy, joyous, and free. And I look at that, and happy, joyous, and free are not synonyms, nor are they redundant. You know, the happiness comes to me from the physical relief that I got when I had the food plan and losing the weight. The joyousness comes from the emotional recovery. And when you get both of those, you can get free. You get free and you have that spiritual recovery. And it's staying in fit spiritual condition. It's staying in fit spiritual condition to that the promises the promises have come true. And some of the things that I do, I mean, I still do the things that I did before. I use the tools, I work the tools, but I use the steps. I make outreach calls. I make, I call my sponsor several times during the week now. I do sponsor. I go to several different meetings. I read the literature, not as regularly as perhaps someone else might, but enough. You know, for me, I needed the slogans. The slogans were what carried me until I could really read the big book. I could not relate to the big book initially. But the slogans and the meditations, I found that when I would rewrite meditations, you know, by hand, that my breathing slowed down, my cadence, I was focusing on the words and the meaning of it, and I began to understand and appreciate everything that everyone had said, and that was sort of my gateway into the big book. I went to Cleveland last summer for the OA convention, and while I was there, God planned a visit to Akron for me. I ended up staying with a friend in OA while I was there, and he took a day off, and we went to Akron, and he'd never done this, but I wanted to go to the Magnolia Hotel, which is where Bill W. was before he met Dr. Bob. And I went to the hotel lobby. It's now assisted living and low-income assisted living. And then they have a phone there, a replica of the payphone. And I was told, bring my nickels and everything else, and I put my nickels in the phone. You don't get a dial tone, but there's the church directory, and I scrolled down the church directory to Reverend Tunk and saw his name and his phone number, and I could hear the clattering of the ice and the glasses. I could hear the music. I could hear, this is in my mind, I could smell alcohol. I could smell cigarette smoke. I could also, for me as a compulsive overeater, I could smell the hot hors d'oeuvres, you know, and I could understand the draw that all that was having on Bill W. and how he had to draw on a power greater than himself to call a stranger, Reverend Tunk, to ask him if he knew another stranger. And I went to the Gatehouse Lodge where Henrietta Cyberling was living, where she set up the arrangement with Dr. Bob and Bill W. I went to St. Thomas Hospital and sat in the chapel where Sister Ignatius helped alcoholics. I went to Dr. Bob's house, where meetings were held in the basement. I saw the coffee pot. I saw the archives. I saw our past, you know. And I'm just grateful to be a recovered compulsive overeater. I am so grateful. The metaphor that I like the most about this program is envision a candle. And when you blow out that candle and you see that little wisp of smoke go up, you look back at the wick on the candle and you see a little orange ember that's just barely visible. And it's about to go out. That was me. I was that little orange ember. And when I came into the room, and God and this fellowship and many, many, many people like you, Bill W., Dr. Bob through the big book, through the literature, Roseanne, everybody was blowing gently on that orange ember until it came back to full flame. I thank you all. This program works. It will work. If it worked for me and I was dead, and I was truly dead, it will work for you one day at a time. Thanks.
Thank you, Cliff. Appreciate that very much. Appreciate your presentation today and for letting us know how you were able to do it God's way and not your way. Thank you so much. And I just wanted to take a moment to let folks know that we will give out contact information for Cliff, his telephone number, after the recording has stopped, and we'll also give you the share ID for this meeting at that same time. But right now, Cliff, are you available to stay and take some questions from our audience here today?
Certainly, yes.
Great, thank you. So I'm going to open it up for some questions and that you might be able to answer for them. Who would be our first person with a question?
Hi, Melanie. This is Liz.
Hi, good morning, Liz. Good morning to you. I want to present your question to Cliff, and also I guess I might want to just add, if you didn't mind, Liz, for just a moment, that we, if we could come right to our question so that we can leave lots of other time for people and their questions.
Absolutely. Cliff, my question to you is, once you came into OA, was there a point at which that you had to, did you immediately find yourself able to surrender to a power greater than yourself, or did it take you some time? And if it did take you some time, I'd like to know what your journey was about.
Oh, thank you, Liz. The interesting thing for me was the power greater than myself was not understood by me, except for the fact that I had always been willing to surrender to somebody else, whether it was a doctor or a friend or a diet. You know, even going out and doing the exercising was surrendering to a coach who would tell me what to do. But it was always temporary. And the power greater than myself, at least initially, was probably my sponsor and the fellowship. It became God over time. You know, I share with people that the first 6 months of program to me was all about losing weight. The next 6 months was about being able to be in nice clothes. You know, the next 6 months were about having this amazing feeling. I mean, just amazing feeling of life coming back. You know, it's like being, you know, a forest and having been in a forest fire and burned to the ground, and then, you know, this lush greenery coming back, and then after that, it was all about God. It was all about how could I be of maximum service to God, and I know now that I'm either going towards God, or I'm running away, you know, or sometimes standing in place. But the more that I am moving towards God, you know, and putting down the food was just the very first thing that I needed to do, because I could not get clarity. I could not get enough clarity to be able to see, you know, to understand any of these concepts. You know, I share that, I don't know if you've ever been in surgery before, and I hadn't had a whole lot of that, but if you go under anesthesia, you know, you don't give somebody the keys to the car and tell them to go home immediately if they're under the influence like that. Well, that's how dead I was. You know, the big book did not open me up to that until I got clear of those chemicals and elements that were just creating a sludge blocking my God antenna. So it was a process for me, but definitely a worthwhile process. One day at a time, it will come if you'll do it. And so I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Liz. Is there someone there with another question for Cliff?
This is Susan.
Hi, good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Thanks so much to both of you for your service. Cliff, thanks so much for the Magnolia Hotel story. That was very touching. Right to the question, though. You said that you didn't I may be saying it wrong, but you didn't get the big book initially, that it took some time. And I speak to a lot of people not in a vision for you in this fellowship who are not yet open or receptive to the big book, and I don't want to write them off and tell them, okay, bye-bye. I wonder how you work with people and or talk to people who are not yet at a point where they are open to the big book. That's the question. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Susan. That's a really good question. A lot of people who do come into program, at least I found, they know that they're compulsive overeaters. And for those who know it, that may be, the big book may very well be. I mean, they are desperate. I mean, that's where it talks about the level of disparity that people may have. But then there are people who question whether or not they really are compulsive overeaters. Even the concept of compulsive and overeating and eating disorders and all these things get complicated. And they're not easily defined. It was so hard to for someone, when I went to my first meeting, what is abstinence? Well, that's a good question. Oh, God, and so I would say that the real question becomes, just like it says in step one, as they say, you've got to smash the illusion that you have a chance of ever being normal. Once a pickle, always a pickle. And that's not easy to do. You can go through a food inventory and things like that, and most of the time, even in working the steps, in a big book study, the question is, do you admit that you're powerless over food and your life has become unmanageable? Do you concede to your innermost self that? And a compulsive overeater who is still suffering from the sedative effects of what's going on, hopefully will at least say yes. Because that's at least, opening themselves up to the sunlight of the spirit. And I think that's really crucial, because that's what happened. That's the slogans. The slogans were sharp enough and short enough to penetrate, my brain, my spiritual deficiencies, and everything else. And because I could hear the slogan, honesty will kill this disease, you're only as sick as your secrets. I mean, I've got almost 2,000, slogans and stories and things like that, but by writing them out, that was my writing. That was the extent of my writing in some cases, just writing about that or rewriting a meditation. It would gradually drew me closer to God. And that was the point. I didn't know that was what I was doing. I just felt it as I was doing it. I found something that was going to keep working until I was ready for the big book, until I was ready. And all during that, the meditations point you in the direction of the big book. The slogans point you in the direction of the big book, but the question is, it's almost like preparing people for it is what it amounts to for me. Okay.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Cliff. Is there anyone else with a question this morning?
Hello?
Hello, good morning. Who's this?
This is Jean from Boston.
Oh, hi, Jean. Do you have a question for Cliff?
Yes, I do. We're talking about the big book this morning. Seth and I appreciate your story. It was like, it was great. Older than you. I got to this program when I was 50, and I've been abstinent ever since. So that long ago, I was raised on the big book. In the literature, there were no, like, there was no OA literature. And so this whole thing, I believed in God, but I thought he had no time for me. That's where I was. So spiritual awakenings, I've had a lot of them, but as far as being abstinent, since I come in, I was, and I am, but stark raving abstinent, that's what I was for about 3 years. Nobody gets struck anything. I didn't get struck anything. So my thing is, I commend you because, you know, it's like I have lost 180 pounds on this program, and you're a man. You're probably a tall man. I'm a 5'3" woman, so 280 pounds was a lot, and I was 50 years old, and nobody believed this was going to happen. So my question to you is, I guess, is this is a disease, and do you said something about, I don't know, there was a quote about those who know and those who don't know, something like that. I don't remember the exact words. But it's like I treat my disease seriously. I'm a drunk with food. That's all there is to it. And I have to be careful who I say that to because they think I'm being, like, dramatic. So if you could repeat that quote to me, I would really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jean. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I often wondered even for myself about the disease and the disease actually about this. And, you know, was I a dry drunk? And certainly, I think it's the same with respect to looking for a sponsor. Now, I wasn't smart enough, to know. I was, you know, again, if you're in a coma, or, you know, or you're in a car wreck and you need a doctor and one comes along, you take that doctor. It doesn't matter whether or not they're a real doctor or a quack. You take whoever is out there. And but the thing about it is that I think in program we really have the ability to look at people and listen. Because so much of, you know, sometimes the eyes can distract us from the reality, at least for me. You know, I have found that, you know, just because someone has lost the weight does not necessarily mean that they're in recovery. They are probably recovering, but we need not just that physical aspect, we need the emotional aspect. And the emotional aspect we can also have is some people call, you know, more like Al-Anon recovery, but without the physical recovery. But it's when you get both of those that we get the serenity. That's when we get the I have recovered, and I get that on a daily basis, a daily reprieve. But I share with people. I said, listen, I've got 3 college degrees, but I am most proud of my honorary doctorate in stupidity, because it was knowing I was stupid when it came to diets, when it came to I was always spiritual, but I didn't know that I could be as much more, I was willing to admit that I was powerless, and to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. And And then I was willing to do the steps, even if the fourth step, you know, I know it says do it fearlessly and thoroughly, but if you do it just enough to prick your barrier, it will let the sunlight of the Spirit in, and God works from the inside out, chipping away, you know, laser-like, what have you. It just comes. It will come just one day at a time. Keep doing it, you know, working through the steps 4 through 9, you know, and then living in 10, 11, and 12, and living it's just amazing. I mean, and I tell people now, I said, you know, I am, you know, I've lost basically half of what I was. I'm half the man I used to be and twice the man I ever was. And it is wonderful to grow. And the quote that you were asking for is that for those who know, no explanation is necessary. For those who don't, no explanation is adequate. Which, interpreting it, means that if I know something you don't know, I'm not going to tell you. Because even if I did, you wouldn't understand. So why waste my time, my breath, and your time? But the fact is that program has act as if, and if I find somebody who has what I want and act as if I've been doing it one day at a time, listen to what they're saying. I mean, you know, if they've got big book recovery and they demonstrated, you know, that they are moving in the direction of you know, a healthy body weight, then, and they've got the emotional sobriety, you know, then it's do what they do, and, you know, and follow the leader, you know, at least in that sense. They are just a bozo who got on the bus sooner than I did. So I hope that answers it.
Thank you, Gene, and thank you, Cliff. Anyone else with a question for Cliff? Maybe we can just form it in a way.
Good morning, Melanie. It's Rita, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Rita. And maybe we can just form it in a way of a question, so we can leave room for those
yes,
that are waiting.
Yes, I'm sorry. I had to leave my phone for a minute. Someone was at the door. Did you give a share code for today for that wonderful transformation?
I didn't, but I will just as soon as the recording
is
done. You can
say okay.
Bye.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone with a question for Cliff?
I have a question. This is Steve.
Go ahead with your question.
Yes, the promise in the big book that I will be restored to sanity and my compulsion will be removed for eating. Does that mean that I can drop a food plan and eat when I'm hungry and be restored to a sanity with regarding food so that I can, with the help of God, eat normally like normal people? Thank you.
Steve, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's interesting for me because in working the last time I worked the four step, I really came to know myself and know the patterns and things of that nature, and know the causes and conditions that helped to create me as a scared, frightened little boy, and growing up and maturing. The thing about it is, though, is that, and I went around asking that question. I asked people with a lot more experience, strength, and hope than I had. I said, well, gee, once I know all these things and I have been restored to sanity and I know why I'm doing these things and, you know, selfishness and self-centeredness, and I'm giving outreach. Does that mean I can eat all these other things? And the answer is that, at least for me, is no, I can't. Once a pickle, always a pickle. I had already blown past, you know, the physiological aspects of the compulsive overeating. Those foods are still going to trigger me, you know, and I don't need to, I love being in conscious contact with God. That is the most awesome feeling, and growing and staying in fit spiritual condition every day, one day at a time, every week. You know, I go to meetings and religious services and what have you in order to get filled with that. I don't need to fill myself with the other things. But no, I'm still a compulsive overeater, and at least for me, I'm going to today, just for today. Well, I'm going to do the food plan that I have. It's kind of interesting. I'll give you one other little tidbit here. That was when my older daughter came home, and I had already lost the weight. And she said, "Dad," she said, "how much longer do you have to do this?" And I thought, I said, "That's a, you know, this is what God put in my head." I said, "That's a trick question." I said, "Just one more day. That's all I got to do. Maybe tomorrow I won't do it. Maybe I'll decide that's not what I want to do. But, you know, just for today, I have a plan. It works, and I get closer to God and closer to my fellows." So, thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Anyone else with a question this morning for Cliff? Good morning.
Hi, this is Hilda.
Hi, Hilda. Good morning.
Hi, good. Yes, I'm South Florida. I'm a compulsive overeater. I have a question. I don't know if it's going to make any sense, but I need to ask it anyway. I can follow my food plan when things are going steady and stable in my life and positive outcomes. When everything's overwhelming, how do you follow? How do you believe? How do you keep your strength and hope and reach out when you're totally overwhelmed with 20 million things going on negative, and some of it is like tragic? I don't know. I'm at a loss. And I just wanted to put that out there. I don't know if that's a good question or not, but it's where I'm at.
Thank you, Hilda. It's a great question. It's a great question. You know, life comes at me. It really does. And I think one of the things for me, I see people, you know, well, my father-in-law passed away after I'd been in program about, probably 6 months. And as we all know, at funerals, they usually have lots and lots and lots of food. And there's not enough space in the refrigerator. And the thing about it was that I still made phone calls. I tried to attend meetings. God prepared myself for this, is what it amounts to. And I share this even with in other programs. You know, I am so blessed that somebody had come up with something for someone as in bad a shape as me, because, you know, it would have taken me. I heard somebody say the other day, you know, they say, you know, even a monkey will be able to you know, type Shakespeare over a certain period of time. You know, it may be a million years, but they would be able to do it. Well, I don't know how long it would have taken me to have written the big book, in the food drunken stupor that I was in. But somebody did, and somebody put together this program that said, you know, if you're a food drunk like I am, you know, call some people. You know, make 3 phone calls a day, you know, talk to them. They don't have to be long. you know, call your sponsor, you know, kind of get centered in the world, you know, make sure that, everything's going on. Make that a priority, you know, because if anything that I make a priority over my program is the second thing that I'm going to lose. It's the next thing, you know, that I will lose. And the beautiful part about it is, you know, my wife, I mean, it's so hard. It's so hard for family to understand. But, you know, when they see, or your friends, but when they see you doing it and they see your commitment, it gives them hope. It gives them hope. And, I mean, I buy stuff for my wife, you know, things that are not good for me. And I have had them, you know, just in my coat. You know, months later, I've forgotten to give them to her, and they sit in my closet or anything else. It's just like the big book says. You know, you can go into the most sordid places of the world as long as you're there, as you're motivated for the right reasons. You know, I love my wife. I would love for her to, you know, even being slender. I would love for her to be able to, you know, the sugar is something, you know, that's probably not a good thing for anybody, but that's not up to me. But the one thing I can do is I can take care of what God has shown me, and that is keep my program first, make the calls, make the meetings. So I hope that helps.
Thank you, Hilda. Anyone else with a question?
Jason?
Hi, good morning, Jason.
Hi. Cliff, thank you very much for your presentation. I really appreciated that. I wondered if you could go into a little more detail, kind of in relation to what you just finished answering for another question. But in your presentation, you talked about putting your program first, and there was this period of adaptation with your wife specifically. I'd like to know, excuse me, a little bit more about that. How did you go from whatever state you were in emotionally in that relationship to one where program came first? I don't know how else to ask it, so that's the best I can do. That's it.
Thank you, Jason. I think what's kind of interesting is that, you know, we say selfishness and self-centeredness are the root of our problem, but I think it's also the root of our solution. You know, before I was selfish for pleasure, and now I am selfish for God, and actually, in order to be present for my wife and my family, when I learned, you know, that I have to have, I want this. It's, you know, I don't have to go to meetings anymore. I want to go to meetings. I don't have to qualify. I want to qualify. I want to, you know, carry the message of recovery. And the only way that I can do it is to keep working on whatever it is that's not working. You know, and I'm not perfect. I mean, you know, but putting program first, and it started for me, it started with me with the food plan. You know, that step zero in program. I mean, it's step zero with respect to, you know, in AA. I mean, put down the alcohol. I wouldn't have known what the alcoholic foods were if somebody had not done it generically for me. And by saying I'm going to do that, and then, you know, when I disagreed with my sponsor on something, and eventually, you know, I acquiesced. I mean, it was painful. It was painful to acquiesce. But that was when I realized that I was willing to do what he was doing. He had what I wanted, you know, and adapting with my wife. I mean, My wife would not read the big book. She still hasn't read the big book. She hasn't read a chapter out of the big book. She doesn't want to read the big book. And I've given her the chapter to the wives, and I've given her something else, and said, so the only way that she can grasp it is, is just by seeing recovery in me. She no longer remembers. This is kind of what's interesting also, is that I used to get angry and upset and holler and carry on and everything like that. She doesn't remember that now. You know, it's only been 7 years, and she doesn't remember that. So she gets the benefit of relationship amnesia. Our relationship gets better and better. We have traveled, we've traveled abroad, and I have brought the program with me. And she understands what I need. At first, she was a little bit miffed at it, and we don't get to go out to eat as much or anything like that. But I'm more than willing to take her out. I'm more than willing, some of the best Valentine's days and everything else is when I've cooked for her, and, healthy foods and everything else. And she said, this was the best I've ever had. That would be my response. If putting program first doesn't mean putting others totally second, but I just have to have give it priority.
Thank you so much, Jason. Anyone else with a question this morning?
This is Frida.
Hi, Frida. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, Cliff. Thank you. I came in towards the end of your talk. I'm sorry. But you talked about putting the food down, step zero. This is the part I'm struggling with. What made you finally put the food down? Was it something like in your head just clicked, or what actually made you put the food down? Because that's where I'm struggling with. It's like I know I have to, but I just can't get to that point. Thank you.
Oh, Frida, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I didn't know I was a compulsive overeater. I didn't want to be there. And God brought me in the room. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. What I heard, I barely discerned. It's like a whisper, of honesty will kill this disease. And I guess I really, in a way, I had to be honest that nothing I was doing was getting it done. Nothing that I had done. I shared that I did triathlons in Hawaii, on Maui, weighing 370 pounds. Going up and down Haleakala, and I don't know whether I was closer to God or closer to a heart attack when I was doing those things. But the essence, part of what I learned, there was a time when I first started. I went into when I first started the exercise program of long distance endurance events. I was doing these for a nonprofit organization, and they of a cancer disease, a blood disease. And the night before, they have the carbohydrate loading and pasta party, and they ask people how many are doing. There are 800 people in this ballroom. They are asking us how many are doing it because you've had this type of cancer before, and a few people raise their hands. How many are doing it because you know somebody who's had it, and a few more people raise their hands. How many of you are doing it because you want to be in better shape, you want to get fit, and probably about 50 people raise their hands. And then they ask the question, how many of you are doing it because you want to eat more? And every hand in the ballroom, 800 people raised their hands to say they wanted to be able to eat more. And I should have known, you know, like I said, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I have 3 college degrees. I should have known that there was a problem here, you know. And the fact is that for me, you know, when I look back on doing the 100-mile bike rides and the triathlons, I call that my active prayer period, because at that point in time, what I was really saying to God was, God, I'm doing everything I know how to do. Please don't take me now. I don't know what else to do. And that's when God brought me in the room. And that's when God brought me in the room. And a few weeks later, I found myself one night with my, when I was trying to do it on my own, I found myself one night in the refrigerator with my head in a bowl full of fruit. And it was sliced fruit and stuff like that. And I kept saying to myself, one more bite, one more bite. And I went, maybe there's some truth to this compulsive overeating. So, okay, that was interesting. And it wasn't until that being 4 months of clean, being clean with my program, that I remembered that dream with my daughters, the one where I was lying in my grave looking up, them watching me be buried. And I've used that dream. That dream is a reminder to me. And now the reminder to me is the relationship that I have, that God has given me with my wife, with my children, with workers, with people in OA. All of those things keep me, you know, willing to do whatever it takes. And yeah, I make my food up, you know, and sometimes it's a pain, but then I remember being frightened walking past the emergency room at a hospital and seeing a gurney and saying, these guys won't be able to pick me up. You know, I don't have to worry about those things anymore. When I go to the doctor, I'm happy. My cardiologist, you know, I used to have to go and see him once a month because to have my blood thinners checked and everything like that. He has to send me a note once a year to come and see him. They don't understand. They wish they could, but it keeps me willing to do whatever it takes, and I am willing to do whatever it takes. So thank you, Frida.
Thank you, Frida. Is there anyone else with a question?
Sarah?
Hi, good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you for your service. I wanted to ask, thank you for your share, Cliff. I appreciated hearing it. I wanted to talk a little bit about 9-step work, because I know in my experience, I've been in the program a long time and I am recovered. What I had was a few instances where I had people that, you know, you talk a lot about the gifts of the program, and I've received many too, but I think I've had to accept sometimes when I've done a 9-step that, you know, we go in without an expectation of how the other person will react. And at times, the way they react isn't always a positive reaction. And talk a little bit about the acceptance of that, because I think that's really important for people. You know, many, many, many gifts, many beautiful parts, you know, strengthened relationships. You know, the family afterwards talks a little bit about it takes a long time for the process of healing to occur. I can't remember the exact words, but I just wanted you to talk a little bit about that, if you would, and thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. You know, the
Cliff, would you press star 1 to unmute, please?
Oh, thank you. Okay. Sarah, thank you. I appreciate that. The 9-step is a challenging one, because it's one thing to admit to somebody else, you know, to admit to yourself and then to admit to somebody else and admit to God, but then to go to somebody else is and share that you want to make amends. It's so powerful. It is so powerful. And I actually have a situation, you know, I mean, there are certainly things that happened in the past that I made amends for. You know, and people were accepting of it. I remember calling one guy up and expressing it to him and just, you know, sharing it. And he happens to live in the in Sin City. But he says, "My God, that is a powerful amends." He says, "That's amazing you're able to do that." And, you know, so you just don't know what you're going to get, and you don't have an expectation. You just know that it's what God wants you to do in order to be able to live in the Spirit, you know, in the sunlight of the Spirit. And, you know, and not having an expectation is important, because the only thing that we really are going there for is for us. You know, we just have to be willing to do it, whether they're willing to accept our you know, amends. It's not up to us. And that's actually very freeing, you know, to realize that, you know, you're not asking them for forgiveness. You're just wanting to do something to clear your side of the street. And, you know, and one thing that happened to me with a particular amends is I tried to call this person and they refused my call. And I happened to be friends with another guy who knows him, and they're best friends, and they talked to him, he talked to him and everything like that, and nothing happened until basically, I think it was around 6 months ago, my friend told me that they were talking about me, and that this other person that I had tried to make amends with said to wish me the best, and, you know, that he was really pleased that all this had happened, and which basically meant that he came out of his own, you know, cloud, his own darkness. You know, and I called him the other day, and it was a beautiful conversation. And so it may not be what you're going to get at that particular moment. It may be something down the road. It may be, you know, months or even years down the road that you find another opportunity to complete that amends, or at least make it fuller. Now, I have had others. You know, there is a, you know, some non-OA literature that was used in another program that I was listening to, and it's the 1 minute apology, which I can't remember who the authors are, but anyway, it's a you know, I have used that to some extent, but it is amazing. The ninth step is such a cleansing experience. I, you know, and even to do basically, you know, 10, 11, and 12 so that you don't have to do, you know, making amends immediately with people is just so powerful now. They're just surprised at it. So thank you, Sarah, for that question.
Thank you, Sarah. And we'll take one more question, if there's one more out there, before we close the meeting.
This is Gay.
Gay, hello.
Hi.
State your question, Cliff.
I would like to know when did you start sponsoring? You talked about 6 months, 6 months, 6 months, kind of your journey. When did you start sponsoring?
Oh, thank you, Gay. When did I start sponsoring? It was probably, I would say, six to 8 months after I had started program. I was in an AWOL, which is a way of working the steps. I was sort of an apologetic, with individuals in the saying that I can only give you what I have, and this is what I have right now. But the interesting thing was that I had some individuals who had been in other 12-step programs, and for some reason, you know, they can detect it in me. People detect it in me when I'm ready better than when I detect it in me. I'm going to protect myself. You know, I'm going to make, you know, I don't know whether I'm making excuses or saying I'm just not ready yet. I wanted to be, you know, completely ready to be able to sponsor. And the answer, I'm never completely ready to be able to sponsor. I can give to the best of my ability to my level, you know, and I can share my experience, strength, and hope. But these particular individuals, you know, were helpful in shining a light on me to say that I, at least they felt as though I was going in the right direction. So thank you, Gay, for that question.
Thank you, Gay. Thank you, Cliff. Thank you all for your questions this morning. It has been completely just enriched the things that Cliff was sharing for us today as well, which is so wonderful, Cliff. Appreciate so much that you're coming on the line today and painting a beautiful picture of how you have let God have it His way. Appreciate it so very much. We'll keep that here in our archives forever. And what I'd like to do now is close this meeting like we do on A Vision for You for a Sunday special edition by reading from the big book on page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.